Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack our feels about fringe fiction. We're going to talk about Twilight Zone. If you want to give us some messages on the tweet zores or the face beaks.
Book of face. The book of face.
Hey, book of faces? Yes.
Book of faces.
Just got to make it all Game of Thrones.
Yes.
That's so creepy. I can't. Anyway. Got a little shook there. Yeah. If you want to hit us up on that, we're at Unboxing Story at both of those things. And at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com.
Right.
Because as Melissa has tabulated her storied history of sci-fi watching, there are many segments of it that might make people nostalgic, yes, as we are nostalgic for those.
Or I may have missed things that you think we should watch.
So,
although I don't know how I could have. It's a very long list, so you will hear the whole list later. It's quite. I used to think that apparently, you know, that there wasn't a lot of science fiction on TV, and I apparently am very wrong. There's not a lot of fantasy on TV.
And I would argue that there's maybe not as much good sci-fi as there used to.
True, but still, it's still there. It's not, you know, disappeared.
Right.
It just keeps getting canceled after 2 seasons.
Yeah. So we'll get into that. but hooray. What's the medieval thing?
Huzzah.
Yeah. Huzzah. I was going to say Seinfeld is back.
What? Nope.
Wrong.
No.
Wrong nostalgic old TV thing. Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Jordan Peele.
Is the bomb. We love you.
Is rectifying. So I think that's one way that we can get into it, is that we've kind of bemoaned in this podcast the landscape of sci-fi as being so depressing, and there not being somebody that has that balance of like dramatic irony within a story without it being so oppressive.
Right.
And I think he's like the person to bring back some of that, like that creepy factor within a sci-fi thing, getting that dramatic irony across while still, like, you don't want to kill yourself after watching something like Black Mirror.
Right.
Or
Electric Sheep.
Yeah. Like, some of those things are just so, like, what, the world's going to hell in a handbasket and none of us can change
get
it.
Get off the planet now while you still can.
Literally, that's part of Blade Runner, is get off the planet. So, what are your favorite, because I feel like we could talk an hour about this,
but no.
What are your favorite Twilight, you're just like, no, please, love of God. What are your favorite Twilight Zone episodes?
So, I will be very, go along with the masses on the sense of the most popular one is the one with the airplane, with William Shatner on the airplane. And actually they redid it for, I don't remember if it was, I think it was, there's like a Twilight Zone movie or something. And they redid it for that with John.
I think that there was an anthology movie done.
Right?
Is that his name? Yeah, Lithgow, yep. I think that there was an anthology movie that redid three classic ones.
And that was my memory serves. That's how good it was. It's literally, and it still worked, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they're going to redo it on this one as well. It looked like there was an airplane one as far as the coming attractions looked, but I don't know if it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just the watching of a character slowly going mad is always interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good episode for that. I actually like the other William Shatner one.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah.
It's him and his girlfriend in the diner, and they have
We were watching it recently.
That there's some kind of like, it's like a Magic 8-Ball thing, but it's you know, you put a coin in and you get a ticket out with some little phrase on it that after you ask it a question, right? And they start to let it like run their day because they think he thinks it's being accurate. And it's, you know, this whole thing about fate. There was another really good one where this woman, the world is ending. And it's ending because the sun, it's like the planet's somehow getting closer to the sun.
Okay.
And so everybody's like, you know, it's really hot and everybody's obsessed with the heat, and this woman's painting this painting about the heat and all this stuff. But then it turns out really it's not melting, it's actually freezing. But she was trying to not focus on it freezing, and so she gave herself the opposite torture. It was a really interesting ending. But as you can tell, probably if you have listened to any of our other podcasts, we like twist endings, and we like this sort of not suicidal, making you feel ironic type of story. So those are the three that have stuck with me the most, I think.
Yeah, because I think that there's things like something like a Hostel or something in the horror genre where they didn't have the characters earn your respect in any way or your sympathy. And so it's just watching these characters get, murdered for their premarital sex or
whatever nonsense reasons,
you know, in general. But a lot of those, like, Twilight Zone episodes are more based on kind of a visceral horror type of storyline, because they're trying to get some kind of tension.
Or the twist itself is a horrifying sort of thing.
Right.
So, but you spend an hour actually liking this character, usually, the characters that you're watching.
Yeah, usually the writers do a good job of, and the character actors that, you know, embody this role within a 30-minute, you know, vignette. Nowadays we have these dramas that are an hour long, but this
they were an hour, the old ones.
No, usually they're 30 minutes.
I thought they were an hour.
If my memory serves, but I think we put them in this category of a good drama, so that might be some Mandela effect going on.
I just remember watching the marathons every holiday. Was it New Year's or something? There's a holiday weekend where they play it.
On I think marathon. It's New Year's. It was definitely something I watched growing up, and there, because of that, there's only certain, memories, like watching the comedian one, which was rebooted for the first episode of this run of it, and I remember specifically the horror or the visceral nature of watching somebody that's saying all these really morbid things. And the audience is just laughing at him. And so I don't even rewatching this version of it that Jordan Peele is producing and on the new CBS show. I was struggling to remember what necessarily the twist was in that version and what the story kind of the axis of it was. But I just remember that thing of him like pleading to the audience in some very honest way and having them just like laugh at him and having that be what he thought he wanted. And then it being this horrifying thing. Another one that's really, that I like a lot is, the Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah.
Where, that's another, it's a kind of visual gimmick where, there's this woman and she wakes up and, in this hospital, but it appears like there's nothing really wrong with her. And it seems like she's trying to escape the hospital. And everybody has these masks on because it's a hospital. You think that that's completely normal. But then you find out that they're all like aghast at her appearance and they make it seem like she's the ugliest person ever. And then, one of them takes their masks off and it turns out that in whatever this Twilight Zone slice of weirdness is, everybody has like hog noses and like deformed lips. And so, you know, you get this whole point of that, like, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And, that's just one that shocking thing sticks out in my head as, a really good reveal. And then for some reason, the one, where there's a woman and you think that she's being invaded, and there's this little spaceship and I think it's drawing off of this like paranoia feeling. And so you're identifying with this woman as if she's a human being invaded by aliens. And then it turns out that this spaceship that she's been like, I think she hits it with like a fly swatter or something And it turns out that it's like, it says NASA, US, you know, something.
Oh, and she's like a giant?
Yeah, and so she's a giant on some alien planet that was being invaded by humans.
That's funny. No, that reminds me, there. I could go on forever, but another really good one is there's a spaceship and you're following these people. And I think I appreciated it because there was a lot of subtle clues through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That you don't realize what they are till you get to the end.
Right.
But they're talking about how they had to get away from their planet. Their planet's dying. And they're really hoping that this new planet they go to is going to accept them. And like, you know, is hopefully they don't like shoot us out of the sky when we get there and all this other stuff. And then you realize they're not humans. They're coming to Earth. They're escaping some other alien planet trying to get here. And there's just like real small, subtle things. Like the telephone looks weird. Like, you know, it's a phone. But it just looks weird. It's like not a phone that we ever had.
Right.
And just other stuff in the background and the part of the set that like kind of these weird subtle clues that they're not us.
Right.
But I appreciated that about the show. It was very good at just kind of subtly putting those clues in there instead of just smacking you on the head.
I think that's something that you could riff on about Twilight Zone is that there's a lot of good visual storytelling stuff that isn't just hooked onto like really over melodramatic expositioning of something. Like there was a good sense of direction with a lot of the directors that were on it of showing rather than telling.
Yeah.
There's another one that I hadn't really been accustomed to seeing. Like every now and again with the Twilight Zone, if you're like a fan of it, you'll be watching it and be like, I thought I saw every single one of these.
Yeah,
oh wait, there's a new
this one.
So there was one that was George Takei gets possessed by like a samurai sword. And it's like the most awesome like character acting that he's done because there's some kind of, again, like it's the details are a little bit fuzzy, but the idea of there being this aggression that's tied to this, like as if all of the sins of America against the Japanese suddenly possessed this guy.
Oh, wow.
And so it's this weird thing where the sword kind of embodies that idea of the aggression of all the Japanese people.
That's another great thing about Twilight Zone. So we're talking about how it doesn't give you the same feeling that a lot of the modern stuff does, where you feel very depressed at the end, but it's still not afraid to talk about those kinds of issues. Like, it's not afraid to bring up racism. It's not afraid to bring up, like, even mental illness type stuff. Like, those sorts of current issue things.
Right.
But it does it in a way that, you know, you get more of a catharsis out of it than just, oh, my word, I want to go blow the country up now or something.
Right.
Like, it doesn't make you feel, like, angry. Like, I finished watching the one episode of Black Mirror I could take, and I was angry and, like, all tied up in knots inside, and I'm just like, I need to go, like, look at bunnies and kittens for a while or something, because this is horrible. And Twilight Zone never made me feel like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's why Jordan Peele, as much as there's so much, like, you might be listening to this, and because you see a certain segment of Twitter that's angry at a black man being successful, or they're angry at like him not being the appropriate amount of social justice warrior that he might need to be. I'm not saying this based on experience. I'm just saying this is how the world works now. You might perceive him a certain way that we don't, as somebody that don't, as people that don't look out for that kind of stuff. My personal perception of his work is that he's able to use the medium of storytelling to have those conversations without seeming to have some kind of it's very much seems like a personal expression of his thoughts as opposed to a certain political agenda.
Right.
It's just a very beautiful thing to see somebody that is able to revive that cathartic like spirit of sci-fi and bring up those types of difficult things. like in the first episode of Twilight Zone coming back, he's depicting this comedian that obviously has a very politically driven worldview and is trying to like jam that into his comedy, and everybody's trying to tell him to lighten up, and you get this kind of dual aspect of the creative process in Camille Nanjiani, which is a comedian that I really like. I find funny, and has personally, I feel like that's a cool like thing that he's able to do, is that he has done that within his comedy, and it's very like cohesive within that. It's like you laugh and it's cathartic to listen to him talk about being a Pakistani American, and it doesn't seem like he's just says the word Trump and everybody laughs.
Right, right.
Like there's,
it's more than that.
Like there's obviously there's, and what I feel like the theme of this episode, and I'll let you cut me off because I'm fanboying so hard right now. I was discussing with Melissa how comedians, Jerry Seinfeld, comedians deal with fear more viscerally than any other creative person. And that, I feel like, was part of the theming of the episode, was that he wanted to deal with, like, gun control. And it was so, it stabbed you in the chest so hard every time he started doing this joke that didn't work.
Yeah.
And that nobody found funny. And his bitterness over the stupidity of the audience was driving him to lash out at other people.
Yeah.
And
to take the easy road. So instead of trying to figure out creatively how to make what he wanted to say into actual jokes, because what he was doing wasn't really actual jokes. It was kind of pointing out ironies and things, but it wasn't actually joking about these things.
Right.
He took the easy road out and started eviscerating other people. And because this is the Twilight Zone, it's not just eviscerating other people every time he speaks of, are we giving spoilers? Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it yet. Instead of just making fun of these people, whoever he mentions by name up there and makes fun of disappears. Mm. Not just disappears, never existed. Mm. Like, they're gone. So the first one he doesn't do is his dog, and then his nephew, and then he starts listing people he's always hated. Like, it's not just, you know, the first two times were by accident, but then after that he realizes, oh, I can get rid of these people? Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So then he starts purposely going after people and getting rid of them.
Right. So,
but it has to be people, personal people. It has to be people he knows and whose name he actually knows, because he tries to get rid of, you know, random scary Nazi guy on the bus, and that doesn't work.
Right. But yeah, but the it's so funny, and that's the part of it that makes it entertaining to watch, is that there's all these things built into comedy in the modern lingo that surprised me based on I knew that this was a previous Twilight Zone episode, but it's so funny that killing is a metaphor that is always used to talk about a good comedy set. Mm-hmm. And,
oh, that's true, because they said, yeah, you killed it up there.
Right, and then there's the...
quite literally.
There's this whole thing of, like, disappearing into your act that I feel like is a good metaphor.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
So there's a lot of that that's just kind of built into... And it fits so much of the modern conversation of trying to do something important with your art, but having just this kind of unrefined, like preachiness to what you're doing often makes people like, it feels abrasive, because it, even if you don't feel like at the time that you're writing something, like it's hate, it comes across as just like, right, look at this, you know, jerk off. And
right,
and it's just like, yeah, well, like, you're not going to change anything. You're not going to make the world a better place just by pointing
just
your finger
at people.
Just by mocking people. And
like, that, I think that's a good point that he was trying to make, maybe specifically about comedy, but in general about creativity, is, you know, your art isn't supposed to be jamming your politics down somebody else's throat. But it's also not supposed to be just outright mocking something, right? That's not art.
Right.
That's being, you know, a second grader on a playground. That's not anything creative. So And I like how they showed that, like, in the show, he was openly just mocking whoever he wanted to disappear and not saying anything that we thought was funny at all. Like, it wasn't really jokes either.
Right.
But because of this weird Twilight Zone, the audience was laughing at it. And that was enough for him to keep going and keep doing these things.
So it's interesting. It still has that kind of tone of the first iteration of this kind of magical realism.
Yeah.
Where sometimes the jokes are so unfunny, but people still laugh at them. There is that, if you are a fan of comedy, there are certain people that even I've like stopped listening to because their whole act, their whole brand is about, you know, complaining about certain types of people. Like, that is very much a thing that happens. So some of the jokes certainly rang true to me in terms of, like, what people go up on stage and do on a regular basis. Some of them, it just, you get that weird cringy, like, something's not right about them laughing at this thing.
Right.
But it's still, the way that it's filmed and the way that it's done, it very much escalates to, and that's another thing I'll say, is that Camille Nanjiani is usually very, like, this very affable, like, he plays very affable characters.
Yeah, he ratcheted the drama up something fierce in this one. It was good.
He was very good at capturing the what's that term? The Schadenfreude. Of,
wow, pulling out the German word now. Okay.
Like just talking about a Nazi, but you can see this welling of emotion that he gets from the reaction of the crowd, mm-hmm. and it fueling this.
And, like, you can see it on his face when he, because there's a couple times where he is faced with the choice of, do I get rid of this person or not? Mm. And you can see it on his face. Like, you can see him toiling inside, well, whether or not to do this. But it's really well done. Like, it's not like he doesn't sit there a monologue about it. Mm. He doesn't have a lot of, like, pacing around the room, talking to himself scenes. It's just like he's getting on stage and he has this look on his face, and you know this is the choice he's trying to make just by the way he's acting. It's really great.
Right. See, I'm glad, as somebody who's broke, that I didn't have to pay for CBS All Access to watch it. I watched it free. It's streaming free right now on YouTube. But it certainly signals that this version of Twilight Zone is capturing some of that magic of that initial premise. And even the, I was happy in terms of creator's rights that the initial title sequence credits created by Rod Sterling. There's not even really a card within that initial title sequence about Jordan Peele, as much as I personally, as a fan of him, like, appreciate that he's producing
this. The front running in that,
as far as the it being framed as, like, this is just, we're going back into that show that you love. This is
And I even think the way he, because he did the narrator's part, like Rod Sterling used to, he didn't, like, I was worried that he might try to, like,
try to ape him
too much.
Yeah.
But I think he did a really good job of just being that creepy, I'm in the background here, narrator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was, I don't know, it was everything I was hoping this would be. So it was awesome.
we both fangirl real hard about Twilight Zone, and we're not ashamed.
Nope.
After the break, we're going to talk about other small screen sci-fi, modern and ancient.
Yes.
That we enjoy. and we'll talk to you then.
I would never forgive myself if I did not start with my favorite one, which I will not go into too much because I have ranted previously about Star Trek at length on other podcasts. But Star Trek, I think, was my first real, like, favorite sci-fi show. Because Dad used to watch the original series. He would watch some of Next Gen, and I would watch some of Next Gen, but the main one that drew me in was Deep Space Nine. And I eventually came to appreciate Voyager. I didn't originally, but I grew to like it later. Mm. Enterprise has its ups and downs. It is what it is. I do not believe that the Abramsverse or Discovery count as Star Trek. That's just my opinion. I think the Abrams movies are fun, but they don't feel as much like Star Trek to me.
Yeah, they're a broad attempt to.
Yeah. And then I don't even want to go into this. Well, I can rant a little because John's going to rant about other things later. To me, Star Trek has always been specifically an optimistic version of the future, right? Where most of the world's problems have, like, there's no hunger, there is no money even anymore. There's no, like, massive political turmoil on Earth and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's this idealized future where the main part of the story is exploring the unknown. It's not about necessarily conquering anything or political issues, although those come up. It's more about just exploring unknown things and what happens when humans run into stuff that they've never seen before. DS9 got a little more complicated in the sense that they brought in things like religion that Star Trek usually didn't touch, and into war times and stuff like that. But it's still dealt with it in a very optimistic, very, I don't know. It was a very, like, cathartic, very beautiful version of how that would end up, with very noble characters and very heroic people, right? Like, Sisko, who is the main story arc through the whole thing, is a very heroic character. He starts off having suffered a tragedy and pushes through it with his family and comes out the other side as this heroic figure. When they introduced Discovery, there were lots of things that I think they made bad choices on, like setting it again in the past when people would have been fine if you went into the future, further into the future with the storyline, changing so much stuff, adding so much stuff that had not been part of Star Trek's past, harping again on Spock, which I'm like, okay, we've already had multiple storylines now that go back and mess with Spock. Like, can you leave him alone now? Move on. There are other Vulcans in the universe. Get a grip. Redesigning Klingons again, which I think was totally unnecessary. All these other choices that I just thought were weird choices. But they made it this very heavy, very grim version of Star Trek, where people have, like, PTSD issues and are harming themselves to do things for the ship and all this other stuff that I'm like, any other Star Trek show, if you had been doing this on the ship, they'd have pulled you out of Starfleet for this. Like, this isn't just, like, you know, occasional bad behavior and they would slap you on the wrist for it. Like, literally, the captain does some really horrible stuff. And this was just, I didn't even watch more than the half of the first season, and that's going on. And I'm like, nobody in Starfleet and any of the other shows would have let that happen for that long without doing something about it. Like, they would have caught that.
Right.
Yeah. And it was just odd that that's the direction they decided to go.
Yeah, I think at first it was just humorous to watch your self implosion around it, but pretty quickly I kind of identified with it in terms of how, like, in between the Tobey Maguire and current Tom Holland version of Spider-Man, that whole thing where they were pretty obviously just trying to keep the rights and they sped out two kind of horrible Spider-Man movies, and the whole Man of Steel version of Superman, like, as a fan of a certain thing, you think, like, this is simple, guys.
Yeah, like,
there's all these elements that you know you love about it, and when there's somebody else trying to make it a commercial success and just going after specific trendy things within the like, genre of, like, action, like, those types of kitschy tropes that people like, oh, let's do another Spock thing because people know that character, like, even though I'm not as in the weeds of it as you are, I recognize that as kind of what was happening to Star Trek, and it started to hurt a little bit more in terms of, like, you know, because that it made you start wanting to watch the old Star Trek, and as somebody that didn't watch that stuff as a kid, because it is much more adult in how it, you know, is telling its stories. Yeah. I got like, oh, this is what Star Trek is. Oh, wait, Discovery's not.
No, it's not. Because the way the storylines go in the shows aren't, there was, like, maybe one that felt like an actual Star Trek story. And then even even just the whole premise, because the main character is like had been court-martialed and was in prison because she like got her ship blown up, and having them pull her out on purpose to put her on this other ship. I'm like, do you know the lengths to which, the crazy lengths to which Voyager, the premise of Voyager, went to have criminals on that starship? Like, they literally had, it was the Maquis, which is like a, what are they called? Terrorist group.
Uh-huh.
Had snuck onto the ship or was doing something near the ship when the ship got shot all the way to the other side of the galaxy. That is the only reason those people were allowed to stay on that ship, is because they were that many light years away from anybody else. Mm. Like, that was the lengths to which you had to, on a previous Star Trek show, go in order to keep criminal people on your ship. This was just, oh, let's pull her out and put her out. Like, no, they would never have done that. They're not that stupid. Like, this is Starfleet, for heaven's sakes. This isn't, like, I don't know. It was just such a weird... Anyway, that's my rant on Discovery, because that was just, it was not right. And I can't bring up Deep Space Nine and not also give credit to Babylon 5, which I only just recently actually watched all of. It was out at the same time as Deep Space Nine. And
one of my favorite writers, J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah, so
he's awesome.
Another.
And it was kind of one of the first times where someone was allowed to have, okay, you have five seasons, write your five seasons, mm-hmm. and was able to do a complete, beautiful, giant story arc mm-hmm. over five seasons of a show, even though they screwed him up at the end and like,
yeah,
canceled it a year early and then said, oh, never mind, we'll give you the last year. After he had finished his arc. So right. It's like, now you're telling me you got another year? What is
switched,
this?
It switched. People, it got canceled by the one channel. And,
yeah.
Because there was a video I was watching about, what was it, Crusades or something? There was a weird spinoff thing that I think just got a season of Babylon 5. And within that video, he was explaining that another channel picked it up. And so he got was able to continue a story that he had kind right. of ended.
Right.
But
even with that, it was a really neat story.
Yeah, no, he's a great writer.
It was really well done. Great characters. Fun stuff. Okay. So then I kind of have the rest sort of blocked off into different groups.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring up the British stuff now, just because. Get that out of the way. So, for example, Doctor Who, which is probably the biggest British sci-fi out there.
Television, yeah.
Obviously, it was another one that had been rebooted. I haven't watched much of the old ones because I keep trying to start at the beginning, which they don't really have a lot of the first Doctor stuff up, so I keep getting very confused. Anyway, I really liked the new stuff. I haven't watched a lot of the new female Doctor, but I do like her a lot, and I think the show is a lot more optimistic with her on it so far, what little I've seen. But David Tennant will always be my favorite Doctor Who. Go Dr. Ten.
True that.
What I think I like the most about British sci-fi is they're not afraid to be goofy. And I mean ridiculous. Like, yeah. Doctor Who is ridiculous. Like, this isn't even attempting at any kind of hard science. This is not attempting any kind of logical anything. It's just, let's be goofy. But still be serious at the same time. Like, they managed to be able to have both in the same show, which I think is cool. Other examples for reference would be, like, Red Dwarf, which is another one. I know you probably have never seen any of those.
No, I've heard of it, but...
Where it's also
never seen anything.
Very goofy, but can also be serious.
Mm-hmm.
Or Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is another good example.
Hey.
Orphan Black... I have in a different section, but I'll bring it up here as well because I think it's a British show.
Yep.
It might be a Canadian show.
I think it's British. A lot of different accents in it.
So which also had some goofy stuff in it, but was a different level, I think, of trying to be harder science than the other stuff.
Mm. No. Yeah, and I think that's a good distinction, is that a lot of these shows, I think, in order to prove their sci-fi cred, are trying to be super grimdark. But
Doctor Who is not.
I think Orphan Black is certainly able to have hard sci-fi with keeping dramatic, like there's levity and there's drama and stuff. It doesn't feel like it needs to be super oppressively dark in order to have hard sci-fi elements in it.
Yes, very true. Okay, so then the next group I have are the sort of self-aware funny sci-fi shows. So we may have mentioned this on other podcasts, but we've been watching Warehouse 13 together.
Woo!
which is a great show. Yeah. It's very underappreciated.
I think maybe part of why I hook into that so much more is that I'm a 90s kid, and the 90s, the whole point of it is to make meta commentary on on stuff. So it hits that sweet spot of being self-aware because it knows that it's aping all these tropes of classic sci-fi. Right. One of the things that I love about it is that it's not Monster of the Week because it's not monsters that they're chasing. They chase artifacts. There's Warehouse 13 is for those of you who haven't seen it, is the idea is that in the middle of the Midwest, there's this warehouse where they keep all these magical objects, and the team, Artie being the boss, and Micah and Pete being the two agents, and then Claudia is their tech person, and Lena owns the bed and breakfast where they all stay. They're all part of this squad that goes after artifacts, and if there's some kind of crime or something that happens or some kind of phenomena, they know that there's some kind of artifact that they need to grab it, bag it, and tag it.
Yep.
And so it's this kind of it's this self-aware comedy action series that has some of the best acting that I've seen in sci-fi television.
And just well-written characters, really well-written characters for what it is, for being a lighter show. They have some insanely well-done characters, mature, funny, interesting people with their own agency and everything.
Right.
So basically it's kind of like X-Files, except without the overarching crazy conspiracy with aliens thing. Like X-Files, they were going after different kinds of stuff, and it felt more Monster of the Week because there usually was some sort of monster that they were trying to stop.
Right.
But X-Files also had some very self-aware humor, especially in the newer stuff, where basically, I swear, those two are just coming back because they are having too much fun doing the show. And it gets almost ridiculous. Some of the episodes are just purposely ridiculous, but they're still fun to watch, I think.
But yeah, they're trying to have more of that meta, thing that they're expecting X-Files fans to come back and be
yeah, isn't this fun?
Excited to, yeah.
I have Eureka down. Eureka was by the same people, I believe, that did Warehouse 13, and they sometimes have crossover episodes together. It's a goofy town of all brilliant scientists making all kinds of crazy stuff.
And it seems like Warehouse 13 and Eureka, I don't know if it had the same producer, but in my mind,
very the same.
They started at the same time on sci-fi, and characters appear in both shows. They cross over a la CSI, that kind of thing.
And then I'll just mention Stargate and Farscape. I haven't watched a lot of Stargate. My problem with Stargate is I loved the movie so much. And then the show is not the same tone and stuff as the movie. Plus it's not, what's his name? James Spader. So it's whatever. But I kind of liked the show for a bit, but it got very samey after a while. Like it's like what human culture did we know what, cause the original one is Egyptian culture descended from these aliens that came. So it's like, what human culture are we going to see the alien origins of now? Basically, it's like every week there's a different thing. So it just kind of got samey for me. Mm. Plus they took it off of whatever I was watching it on. So I couldn't watch it anymore. Farscape, which you have not seen yet. Is fun because the aliens are all Jim Henson puppets and or altered humans. There is no CGI alien stuff at all.
Okay.
And I've always loved that. That's what I loved about the old Star Wars, is that there was a physical thing there for the actors to be interacting with. I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Plus, it is also somewhat self-aware, somewhat goofy, but a very serious, good arcing storyline that they cut off way too soon, so I'm still ticked about that. But it's fun to watch, and you all should see it.
Yeah, I didn't see any of Farscape. There's some character that I think intimidated me a little bit because not many of these lead in their marketing with the alien creatures, but I think they had Jim Henson, they did that a lot more. But yeah, there was always those, I would be reading a comic book and see a Farscape ad and be like, "Was this guy so
it does feel albino creepy.
And he's like..."
Eh. Well, there's a blue lady and there's... I don't know what the little thing is. He's got a lot of legs. I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting stuff.
But I think that's the interesting thing about the... If I had known it was Jim Henson, I'm a big fan of Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and stuff like that. So if I had known that, I probably would have been less intimidated by weird, creepy alien things.
I'm going to... You know, I can't skip that one, though. I was going to skip the next section, but I can't because there's stuff that I need to say. So then there's the group that I am calling, they're trying too hard. Because they're trying to be the more serious hard sci-fi show, but they're not quite getting it.
Uh-huh.
I really probably shouldn't say Battlestar Galactica was like that because it was pretty serious for the most part. But I feel like they kind of missed it with the ending.
Uh-huh.
Like, they were trying too hard to say something, and nobody's quite sure what. So it's like, what is going on here?
I'm on the edge of my seat. So,
but the tenseness of Battlestar Galactica, especially at the beginning, because the whole idea was, in the original series of it, there were these robots that were trying to destroy humanity, called Cylons. In the reboot, Cylons have come back, but now they can look like people and are almost indistinguishable from people. So they come back and try to destroy humanity, and only so many ships escape, and they have to keep jumping, like light speed jumping, every so many minutes because they think they got away, and then the Cylons show up again, and then they have to jump. So like they have no rest for like the first season. They're just incessantly jumping, and it's like destroying their mental stability and all this other stuff. So they did a really good job with the opening of it. But then at the end, it's like, it's just a very confusing ending.
Yeah, I've heard people complain about that. And I'm like,
I don't even know what this is supposed to mean.
Almost as much as something else that's coming up.
Oh. But I also enjoyed Lost in Space, but I think it was another one where they're a little too, I don't know.
Are we saying that you watched the original one? Or are you talking
about I haven't seen the original one for Lost in Space either. There's a lot of these I haven't seen the originals. Dark Matter was a really cool premise, and then another one that kind of got lost along the way as they went. Dark Matter, they all wake up on a spaceship and have no idea who they are at all.
I'm interested, though, to hear what you're going to say about Lost in Space.
Oh. Well, it was just, like... I thought the idea of the original was more like Swiss Family Robinson, where they get stuck on the planet and nobody knows they're there. So they have to like learn how to live there.
Right.
In this one, in the new one, although I loved the villain, like something fierce, she was really, really good at being what she was. I think they got a little too into making it a family drama, which is fine because the family drama was interesting. But they didn't, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to sustain it. Are they making more? Like, I don't know where there is. There just the one season?
But what is it that you wanted from it that it wasn't giving you?
I don't know. I don't think it was quite as much about them trying to survive the planet as I wanted it to be.
Yeah, and I can see as an actual sci-fi fan that you would want that as a casual sci-fi fan.
Yeah, you're just like, no, I need all that.
I appreciated that they tied in the emotional conflict to something sciency, but it certainly wasn't. It was bordering on sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah,
in the sense that, like,
I guess I wanted it to be harder sci-fi than it was. Like the first few episodes were when, like, they got stuck on the ice and stuff, like that kind of thing, where it's like us trying to survive and we're using science to do it. Okay, cool.
Right.
But then it became a lot more about, all right, everybody has to get along, and why is everybody arguing all the time? And I'm just like,
I could see.
If I wanted this, I could watch, you know, Survivor. Like, why are we doing this?
I get that.
And then just a shout out, quite quick mention to Falling Skies and Extant. Like I said, there was just ones that start really well and they have a really good premise, but as they go along, I don't know if it's maybe they didn't have a plan for how they were going to end, or they didn't introduce where they were going early enough so that by the time you get where they're going, you're just like, where did that come from? But anyway, next is the very heavy, more serious section. So stuff like The Expanse and Colony and Black Mirror and Maniac and also Carbon. So to your
point, it seems like Discovery is trying to be one of these shows.
Yes.
Not
one of the other ones, which it should be. Yes. So I love The Expanse, like, tons. Mm. They're making a good, solid effort at hard science, even though some of the stuff is really crazy out there. They have really awesome noir detective stuff going on in there, which is another big plus for me, because I love when they put that into sci-fi. I don't know why I love it so much, but I do. And still manage to have really interesting politics happen, which usually in a show, when the politics part comes on, I hate it.
Yeah, you go to sleep.
Yeah. But this one, I am all into the politics. I love the one main senator lady. I can't even remember her name, which is terrible, but she's an actress that I really like anyway, and she's doing an awesome job being in that show. Colony, we watched together.
Yes.
I miss that show a lot.
Because, yeah, that was another one that started out really strong, did, to your point, an epic job at focusing on the science fiction while keeping characters that are fleshed out over the course of the show. They keep introducing different interesting things. The main premise, for those of you who didn't watch it, shame on you. the whole idea is that aliens invade, but instead of just becoming like stormtroopers and invading that way where the aliens are running Earth, they have this proxy government set up. And Josh Holloway, who played Sawyer on Lost, is invited by the proxy governor to become an agent of the...
of the aliens.
Like an agent who is kind of like a counter-terrorist unit against rebels, against the aliens. But then the kind of pilot thing, spoiler alert, ends with the idea that his wife is part of the resistance.
Right.
So in one way, this is how he can, his son is a MacGuffin. Where it's like, as patronizing as that sounds, his son is the person that he wants to find. He's lost in some other district. And so he joins the counterterrorist type thing in order to get his son back, because the governor promises him son. This was, I think, at this perfect juncture in my mind to talk about all these things of like, so you have a president that you hate.
Right.
How do you deal with that? Resisting in a way that doesn't get
everybody
you
killed.
And all your activist friends murdered
right. By
the secret police. So like, there's all these things that it's playing with in terms of politics and things like that. Like, for example, the Star Wars prequels were hellish and how they like tried to ham-fistedly put that in a sci-fi fantasy thing.
Yeah.
And it just deadens the drama of what, you know, a franchise everybody loved. This was really good action, drama hybrid that captured, and there's a lot of interesting sci-fi ideas in it, while also managing to really thoughtfully talk about these hard conversations of, well, if your friend is one of the part of the like bourgeoisie, does that mean that they're a Nazi automatically? Like, there's, to your credit, like there was a conversation that we had, part of it, where we disagreed about like, well, if this person is signing up for the secret police, does that mean that the terrorists should just bomb
the whole bunch of people that are about to sign, like they bombed the line of people waiting to sign up for the secret police
right. Before
they were secret police, before they were doing anything wrong. And I'm like, that's not fair.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah, like they just killed a bunch of innocent people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, but that
brings up good discussion topics like that.
Yeah. So anyway, the one last
serious one I really want to bring up is Altered Carbon. If you haven't seen that, you really should. It's one of those ones, a big what if question. Like, what if we really could download ourselves onto a computer disk and put ourselves into anybody we wanted? How would that screw up our society? And it just goes with it. There was like one bit at the end that I wasn't terribly a huge fan of, because I think they tried to like ham fist some feminine power in there somewhere. But other than that, I think it was a really cool storyline. I think they were very honest about how that would affect humanity if we could do these things, and the lengths to which people would take it. And again, another very cool noir sort of detective story involved. in it. So, in general, very cool. A lot of nudity, though, for anybody that bothers, like, tons of both genders. They don't care. Just naked people everywhere. But other than that, it's a really good show.
I want to take a brief aside to, in thinking about how I've kind of conducted the notes in this show, and this kind of comes from how I've seen people criticize some of the YouTube channels that I like a lot, that are very heavy in terms of, like, treating film criticism, like literary criticism, and talk about symbols and all that stuff. I referred to Jordan Peele's last movie, Us, as being part of Woke Horror, and I went on kind of a diatribe about how that's, in my mind, it was this African-American symbol of, like, how the Underground Railroad is powerful and stuff like that. And I just want to say that, like, I don't say that because I'm trying to say that anything that a black person creates has to do with slavery and reaction of some kind of racial thing. And I think going forward, I'm going to try to hit that gas pedal a little less hard with going on certain, like, critiques of something as a symbol, because I feel like the negative side of that is that I can start pigeonholing certain creators as having some kind of thing, some kind of agenda that they may not have. And because that might be a minute or two out of a whole podcast that's about a very general topic, it might come across to some people as like, well, just because he's black doesn't mean he's writing about the Underground Railroad. So yeah, a quick aside, but I feel like to give my final thoughts on Twilight Zone and Jordan Peele and more generally his creative voice, and then I'll kick it back to you. I feel like he's very good at implanting some of those images and ideas about social justice and those types of things without hitting you over the head about it. And so one of those images that came to my mind when he talks about all these things underground that nobody uses was the Underground Railroad.
Right.
So just because of that, that's why I kind of had that hot take. But I think you can interpret it many different ways. Any final thoughts that you have?
Well, we're going to go to a quick break again.
And you have more stuff?
Come back. Of course, yes. There's more stuff. There's always more stuff.
Okay.
We'll be right back. But wait, there's more.
And so we're back from outer space.
So I kind of wanted to wrap up with two kind of more giants in the industry, not just in movies, but in TV. I remember when I was in college, J.J. Abrams' stuff was the thing to watch. Like, everybody watched Alias. Everybody. And when I finally got around to watching it, I was very surprised to find supernatural and sci-fi elements in it. Like, I didn't know that's where it went.
Right.
And it went to some surprising places. So most of the time, people think of it as like it's more of a spy thriller show.
Yeah, that's how I perceived it.
But by the time you reach the end of that, you're like, oh, really now? Okay then. So that was the first J.J. Abrams thing that I was exposed to. And then I know you were all about Lost. And Lost went even further by being the crazy, epic, beautiful thing that it is.
We're Lost apologists on this. but yeah, complete your rant about Alias, because I have so many things to say about Lost.
Well, the only thing about Alias that got on my nerves was, you would think at some point when you are hired to be...
I know where this is going.
When you are hired to be a scientist for a super secret government project, that they take you aside and give you some tips about your new life as a super secret scientist, and say to you, if some gorgeous woman out of nowhere comes up to you and starts seducing you, she doesn't want you. She wants the super secret project.
Yeah.
Like, how hard is that? But it happened in so many episodes on that show. I'm just like, you'd think somewhere they would have told scientists that that's like, they're not after you, honey. I'm sorry to tell you this, but they want the thing. Just, you know, call us and we will come and save you. And the thing, just don't give up the thing. Like, what's wrong with you? Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
But it went into like a very, like it ended up having to do with like some Renaissance scientists who had like some secret to the universe, and they were trying to, like, it was a bigger thing than just spy stuff.
And that's interesting because it, as a young guy looking at the ads for that, it definitely looked like it was trying to get viewers hooked on that show based on alone the idea of Jennifer Garner as this beautiful kick-ass person. Right.
Plus they were like the champions of cliffhanger twist ending things. Mm-hmm. Like they would hit you with something like, oh my word, are you serious? And then end the episode and you're like, no. And that was back before we had Netflix. So you had to wait a week to see the next one. And everybody was like flipping out all the time. Mm-hmm. But I watched it on Netflix, so I didn't have to flip out.
Yeah. And that, talking about flipping out based on cliffhangers, Lost was
Show, and then there was Lost.
I didn't get into while it was first airing. It was just kind of somebody that I was a fan of on various internet-y things was starting this rewatch of it. It feels like the first time is their podcast. And he was just this passionate fan of it. I know my friend Josh was a fan of it, so I got into it and I was kind of like telling him about the different parts that I had gotten to. But that it's such an interesting case because on the one hand, you do have some of those like 90s leftover tropes of like love triangles and very kind of like, you know, like this is a primetime drama things that like, you know, now Evangeline Lilly complains about how she like was in this, you know, kind of, you know, ham-fisted love triangle.
Is that the person that plays Kate?
Evangeline Lilly.
I don't want to hear nothing from her because Kate
Check out your rage about the writers and
Kate
how they wrote her character.
Nathan Fillion for that loser on that island, and I don't understand it.
But this is what
makes no sense.
This is what I say because
what girl in her right mind ditches Nathan Fillion?
She hated that as much as you did.
Okay, good. She should.
But even though there are those things that we're like, it's very like you're aware of some things about how this character is acting that are very non-diegetic, and you're just like, can I get past this episode to get the interesting stuff that I like? But the characters within that I love, I really just really love Hurley and
a lot
Charlie
of people still. Call them Locke. Those things. Like, that's how they remember them.
Yeah, it was this linchpin in our society of people, like, and
that's another
one
I was surprised that everybody watched.
Yeah,
like,
we discussed this, that Star Trek and Lost are these kind of, outliers in terms of everybody seemed to get this sci-fi premise, and Lost was just this, like, magical island where these people crash.
And it was weird, too, because it's, like, the kind of thing, like, they purposely were trying to confuse the daylights out of your audience. Like, that was what they would throw stuff in there and just like, what? Like, what? On purpose, like every episode.
And I think that's the poster child for, even if you have the craziest, seemingly ridiculous ideas, as long as you like the characters and you like their character arcs and you believe, like, they're doing the magic trick of making you believe that this character is a person.
Right.
You can really do a lot of stuff that you wouldn't think that you're allowed to do with
a sci-fi
premise.
Yeah, they got away with a lot of... And just TV in general, like, the way they told the stories, like, the amount of flashbacks they got away with by focusing on different characters... Mm-hmm. The sideways weird time shift. I don't know what kind of nonsense storytelling they were trying to do. Like trying to figure out the through lines for that show was like, had to think it makes me think that they had a wall somewhere, like in A Beautiful Mind with like string going all over the place. Cause that's the only way you can keep track of that show.
Right.
But anyway, it's just, it was brilliant cause they managed to do it and had everybody watching it to the point that when you got to the ending, everybody still as a cultural test point asked you, what do you think of the ending of Lost? Right. Like that's a thing. Anyway.
And we'll avoid that rant by just saying we dug it.
Yeah.
If you don't, then add us on Twitter.
Yes. The other JJ Abrams one I have to bring up is Fringe because that's my favorite one. As much as I enjoyed the other two, Fringe, I think, is, it's just so quirky. Like, I can't not like it. Mm-hmm. Plus, I like the, I don't know, I just like the story that it is. And how it's almost using the metaphor of a father-son relationship. Like, it's expounding on a father-son relationship. Like, the real issue in that show is a father-son relationship.
Right.
But they take it into this big, crazy sci-fi universe.
Right.
Just based on that. And I think it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And the acting on that's really good, too. I think. Because there's people playing alternate versions of themselves. And
I've been trying not to be... Because, like, I get... With criticism, I get very sardonic about it. And so I've been trying to... stay my mouth when I'm watching it and I'm like, Warehouse 13 is so much better than that. But like, it's a little bit reductive because it's not like the actors are, I think, really good. Anna Torv, I really like her on Mindhunter. I think she's very good at subtlety in her acting. And I think the writing is just good, but there's just certain things that I like better about.
Yeah. It's not the one that grabs you, you know?
Yeah. So.
All right, and then we're going to move on to Joss Whedon, because he had some giants on TV as well. Yeah. When I was young, everybody watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
I was not that one.
I had a period of like,
although I don't know if I can count that as sci-fi. Is that technically fantasy?
Yeah, I would put
urban fantasy?
Yeah, I would put it more in that camp. But I think it's appropriate to talk about Joss Whedon as seminal within,
but that was his. That was his big. That was his biggest one, as far as I know, on TV. Right?
Yeah,
like, that was the huge.
It's interesting because it was a similar time when I started watching Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Buffy, because it was like Mom and Dad would get up for work, and I would get up, and we would watch Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh yeah,
and then there
was not a good thing to watch in the morning, folks. Don't do that to yourself.
But that was interesting because it had some, there were some sci-fi episodes, yeah. There were
some other mystery episodes. Like things. It was cool.
Buffy, that was when I was just like, where has Sarah Michelle Gellar been all my life? Because I wasn't part of that 90s love of that. And Chrissy Swanson's the same way, but that's a different topic. But the witticism of the show, I very much dug. And the fact that he kind of built this world,
right,
where this cheerleader is, you know, working with this library dude that's like secretly.
I think to me though, it still felt too much like a CW teen show.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like teen shows anyway. Uh-huh. I didn't like teenage shows when I was a teenager. So like, I just never really got into it. Mm-hmm. Like I liked the movie, which is terrible because people like want to hate me for liking that movie. To be fair, it's not the best movie ever.
It's just a funny thing because I think Fringe kind of falls to me in a kind of a young adult area where like they're dealing with these things in a more adult way, but there's still that quirkiness that is the driving force that reminds me of those CWE things. And so like, I'm not a diehard fan of Buffy because like, I dropped off. After a little while.
I never got to see what's his name become a werewolf. I didn't get that far.
Which one becomes
apparently, a werewolf? Apparently the redhead kid.
Oh.
Becomes a werewolf.
Yeah, I didn't watch it that far.
Why can't I think of his name? I almost called him Ron.
Seth Green?
Yeah, that guy.
I know the actor.
Yeah.
But I don't know his name in the show.
But I don't know, yeah. I almost called him Weasley, and I know that's not his name in the show.
Also, I'm a fan of people that write, that focus a lot on dialogue, and that it's almost like writing music. Like, that's why I'm a fan of like Aaron Sorkin. There are some writers that are really good at doing the comedic beats in with other things, and they make it feel more natural than something like what's called Gilmore Girls. That like after a while it just became like no one talks like this, and this is annoying me now. I'm a fan of Joss Whedon and his dialogue, and There are certain hits and misses, maybe even within the certain piece, but generally, like I gravitate towards. It almost feels like more like the tone of like an Indiana Jones, type things, where there's this kind of adventure,
very pulpy,
and this sense of whimsy within it.
Yeah,
that like you said, with certain sci-fi, it's kind of missing, And so when you have the hankering for that, you're just like, oh, what's up?
Yeah, there we go.
Joss Whedon did.
So I was happy when I found out he was going to do, that he's doing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because he does a good job with ensemble casts.
Right.
He does a good job of, you know, really embodying the characters that you love in ways that you love.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he does a great job with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a fun show.
Right.
Some of the seasons have been weirder than others, but the last one was amazing. The real tragedy of Joss Whedon, of course, is Firefly.
Everyone.
Firefly.
Wait, I hear a disturbance in the voice. As if a million voices cried out.
It's so true. Yeah. Because anybody I know with any real geek cred knows Firefly and misses the daylights out of it.
Yeah.
And it was so tragic because it only got one season. Yeah. And for all we know, then the rest of the seasons could have sucked. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the season we got was great.
Yeah.
And then Joss Whedon said, well, screw y'all. I'm going to make a movie and make it so you can't make this anymore. Which he did. And it was a beautiful movie, Serenity.
That has a emotional spike in my sound wave file of memory. Because I wasn't a fan when it aired. Like, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it when it aired either. And everybody was like, you haven't seen Firefly? Yeah. Like, what's wrong with you?
That exact thing happened to me. I watched the show, and then my more casual friends, in terms of being fandom, in different fandoms, they couldn't care less. And we were at the movies, and Serenity happened to be playing. And I'm like, guys, you need to see this. And they're all like, this is probably going to be corny. And then they watched it, and they were all like, praising me for
where like, did you find having, this?
Yeah. So, like, it was just a cool thing because that opportunity rarely comes where people completely miss the, whether it's marketing or, like, just how awesome something is that you like, and then being able to introduce them to it.
And I think probably what captured most people for Firefly, really, if you look at most of, not so much nowadays, because nowadays I think it's more the noir detective end of story types.
Right.
But originally, a lot of science fiction might as well have been a Western. The idea that you're going out into a frontier that isn't very well controlled and that isn't, you know, under the rule of law, and you're out there doing crazy survival stuff, it's very similar to a Western idea.
Right.
Where you're going to run into hostile natives, you're going to, like, it's the same thing, yeah, just in space. So Firefly literally is a Western in space. Like, that's the way you can describe it. And they even give you the feeling of it with the way everybody dresses and the setting and everything.
Yeah.
So it's a very adventure-filled science fiction. That's one that's not about the science fiction, really.
Uh-huh.
It's more about the politics and about being out on the frontier. But they did it in such a way that just, like, everybody loved those people.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody still loves those people.
Yeah, they're very iconic characters. Very memorable points within the story, like the there's a sudden but an
it's sudden so but inevitable trail. That line is the best.
Yeah, there's those types of things that stick out because Whedon is really good at characterization. He's very good at that witty dialogue. But I think what may put it above that early adventure of writing Buffy for him in his career is he really nailed this very high concept idea, something that people hadn't seen before, and created this cast that's like kind of like a family that you fall in love with and look forward to diving into their world every week. So,
but then my honest favorite that Joss Whedon did was Dollhouse.
Mm.
Which probably is not really as well known as his other stuff. It's not as popular as his other stuff. But I think the concept was brilliant. I think the execution on that concept was brilliant. And it's another one that got canceled too soon for him to actually finish his arc. So he kind of rushed the ending to finish where it was going. But he did some brilliant episodes with that.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept for Dollhouse is that they found a way to erase or suppress a person's personality so that they can download other ones into you and make you whatever they want.
Right.
And people could hire rent people from this corporation to be whoever they wanted them to be. My favorite episode, there's the tech guy that works on these dollhouse people. finds himself alone in the office one night. And apparently, when he's alone in the office, he wakes up one of the dolls and downloads a person into them. And so you're expecting, sort of, for him to, like, make this sexy woman, because he picks a really pretty woman to come out, and you're expecting him to, like, have some kind of date night or something. No. He downloads his version of his best friend, and they spend the entire night playing video games and throwing a football around and, like, just doing bro-y stuff. And I'm like, who is this guy and where can I find him? Because I want to marry that guy. Like, what in the world? It was just so adorable because he just wanted a friend. That was it. And it's like this really honest, like, this is what my friend would be right here. But anyway, it was just a lot of really fun, cool stuff. Also, one of the few times I've seen like a somewhat plus size character considered beautiful. Like, she was one of the dolls. But she was a bigger woman. Who also got to kick someone's butt at some point in the show. It was a really cool thing. But anyway, that was my personal favorite to watch. Probably not everybody's thing, but I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, it's hard to tell when there's something like that that gets canceled, whether it's more of, like, they didn't market it the right way, or...
That's,
like,
a hard one to market, really. Because you're gonna go... People will go into it expecting it to be certain things, and it's not. Like, it wasn't a very, like, sex-filled show. It wasn't a very, like, because you can almost think it would be just from the premise. But it wasn't about that. It was more the psychology of, because the one doll, basically the main character is one of these dolls, but keeps her personality somehow. So it's her trying to get out of this thing and what it, when, you know, anyway. And then we're just going to, I'm going to shout out to some old ridiculous shows because sometimes it's just so bad
that you feel good. Like it's like a guilty pleasure.
Yes. So of course there was Quantum Leap, which the concept of, I didn't really watch a ton of it, but it was funny
because shout out to Obscurus Lupa. She's somebody that was like obsessed with that show.
Oh really?
And maybe you'll enjoy her reliving some of the
I'll have to do that. Because it's basically the concept of this guy travels through time and possibly realities. I wasn't quite sure exactly what's going on there. But he inhabits other people's bodies.
Right.
It's not just, oh, he gets there and he has, like, a robot to be in. No, he's, like, literally in somebody else. Right. And the one scene I remember the most is the one time he popped into somebody's body and was a woman. It was, like, the first time that kind of stuff had come up in a show for me. So I just thought it was hilarious. Then, of course, they kind of tried to revive the idea with a show called Sliders. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I pretty...
It was a very similar concept, but it was like a team of them that would slide into other things. And there was... Anyway, that one was ridiculous and didn't last very long. They made... Shut up. That's not how that goes. And then there was this crazy show called Sequest, which they need to do more of this concept because they don't do it very much. But they were... It was all about under ocean... exploration. This wasn't space. They were in the ocean dealing with
weird stuff. I think there might be a comic of that.
Is there? That was the dolphin talks? No, like it was just...
I don't
just...
remember that from the ads.
So like, you know how they... Very interesting. How they had... they have things now where like they teach gorillas sign language so that you can communicate with the apes. They had some sort of thing rigged up to translate the dolphin. So they had a dolphin living on their ship that would talk to them. I don't know. And then I think, hang on, I gotta find out who the main actor was, because I'm pretty sure he was like somebody I had a crush on at the time.
I'll think a little bit.
But the other fun
apparently vamping for me is music.
Oh, sorry, let me correct. It's Sequest DSV. There was a...
Alright.
Let me see if I can...
Oh, what were you fawning after today?
Oh, wait. I gotta do the IMDb because they don't tell you in the right order on Wikipedia. Here we go. Oh, I don't think that's the right one. Oh, that is. Jonathan Brandis. That's who it was. He was
Click his name because I that sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't know.
He's the hot blonde teenager.
Brought to you by IMDb. Jonathan.
That kid.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I'm trying to remember the other think he was in that I was all.
Oh, he was in. That's where I know him from. It's Never Ending Story too.
Oh well, there you go. Yeah, that guy. He was in Ladybugs. I remember Ladybugs. Anyway, so yes, hot young teenage blonde dude, because that was who I was crushing on at the time, was on the ship.
All these that doesn't weird me out. The one that weirds me out is all the girls talk about Devon Sawa, who is in 5 minutes of the live action Casper movie.
Oh, that
when
kid.
Casper is turned into a
By that time, I was over it. I was too old by that point.
Weird that it's just like he's an animated ghost for most of
this. Yeah, and now you're into this kid. Like,
and now
what?
It's just like that's so.
I also really like Roy Scheider, who played the captain. He's a cool dude. I like him.
Oh yeah.
Stuff.
We're gonna need
so
a bigger...
it was yes, that guy. It was a cheesy show. It was really cheesy. Like even Dad thought it was cheesy. So you know how bad it is.
He watches Kronos.
I know, but this one he would be down on me from. But it was just neat because like how many sci-fi shows are about exploring the crazy ocean? And let me tell you, the ocean is freaking crazy. I was just watching Blue Earth 2. It is disturbing what stuff lives in our oceans. Like really, you need to watch
this. I felt that way watching Aquaman. I felt like there's so many like that's to me one of the most redeeming qualities of it is that like you're seeing all of these things that are at least paying homage to how fascinating the ocean is.
And it is. It's creepy.
But just most of them are kind of corny.
Yeah, which is a shame. But it was a fun show. If you're into something cheesy, go ahead and watch that one.
The comic. Maybe that's a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Commercially.
And then I did actually watch some of Buck Rogers of the 24th Century. That was way, way before me. And was very 70s.
I thought that was just a Looney Tunes joke.
No, it was a show.
I knew that there was a Buck Rogers, but I didn't realize that whole name was the actual thing.
It just fascinates me to see what different eras think of the future. So, if you want to know what the 70s thought the future was going to be like, watch that one. Because going from having read stuff like, you know, Jules Verne's to see what the Victorians thought the future was going to be to stuff like that, what the 70s thought it was going to be to now, where people are like, we're all going to die. What's the point? Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's what everybody's thinking with their science fiction at the moment.
Oh, right.
You know, it just fascinates me to see over different eras what the idea of the future is.
Yeah, I can see that.
But anyway. So, thank you for indulging me and listening to all the many science fiction things I have watched and loved and maybe not loved as much, but still enjoyed.
Yeah. It's been fun to talk about small screen sci-fi because a lot of these things just kind of are planted as scenes in your head, or as seeds, rather, in your head. And so when it gets brought up again, like, I have a book that's one of my favorite writing books is the DC Comics Guide to Writing. And that writer, Dennis O'Neill, talks about how, like, he loved watching Magnum P.I. If you asked him to describe an episode of Magnum P.I., he would have no idea.
Nope.
But he's like, I
like the guy with the mustache.
And I like the mustache. So, like, that was his way
butler?
Of saying
I love the butler.
When you like kind of these pulp fiction type things, they're just cranking out episodes. They're cranking out comics. And so you're just kind of very passively, like, participating in them as this entertainment. But then when somebody brings something up, you're just like, I love Lost, and everybody that doesn't like Lost should die. Like, and you get very passionate all of a sudden about it.
Which is where the Star Trek rant comes from.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So yeah, if you want to share some of your real passionate thoughts about some of these things, you can hit us up at Unboxing Story on Twitter, Facebook, those things. I'm at John Matos Writer on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at MomToast_Mel.
We're both writers ourselves, so if you want to check out our projects, you can find Misha's. That's my, don't call her that. I get to call her that.
He gets to call me that. Nobody else does.
You can find MomToast stuff at MomToast.com.
Yep.
And you can find my stuff at JohnMatosWriter.com. Or the link in the those things on all the social media things
and stuff.
Those linky things. thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.